Well, I had all intention of leaving behind the topic we've been on. I really tried to do it this time, but I was not successful. Some of you guys were responsible again for bringing to my attention that we were not done. So we have moved on to the following verses, but what I discovered as I started digging through there is that they really are talking about the same thing. So this is where we are today. Matthew 16, and we'll be in at the end of 16. Matthew chapter 17 will be starting, and this is called the Transfiguration, and this happens just a few days after Jesus' last conversation with his disciples. So, most of you probably have an idea of what goes on here. Do you remember Jesus had? And this is what Matthew, particularly above the other Gospels, what he has a knack for doing is putting things where they fit. Like this story fits perfectly here. So these guys in their Eastern thinking, they didn't think like we do in Western thinking, where everything has to be chronological. So you read a story and it has to be chronological. You know, I mean, the Bible is basically chronological, but Eastern thinking gives it, you can put things in a different place if you want to. And so these writers are Eastern in their thinking, and so they have the freedom to put things, in a sense, to rearrange them a bit. It's not that they're changing the meaning of the story, but they're really doing it in a way that it makes more sense to them, and if we study it, it makes more sense to us. But this is chronological, in that this story follows right after those last conversation that Jesus had with his disciples. And that's where we've been, is the conversation that he had with the disciples and then with the crowds. Do you remember the conversation? Close. That was the previous conversation that led into the next conversation. And that was, try again. What? You must die. So, Jesus gave these guys some bad news. They were with Jesus. They heard the depth of his teaching. They felt the depth of his love. They rubbed up against truth, eternal truth. And this is the Messiah. This is the Messiah. This is the one we have waited for. He's going to lead us. And then all of a sudden, in the midst, there's just been this great crescendo. And now all of a sudden, Jesus says, and let me tell you something else. I'm going to die. The scribes and the Pharisees, the Romans, they're going to put me to death. And in other places, he describes more detail. They're going to put me on a cross. But I'm going to rise again. And they don't want to hear this. They do not. And the cross, that despised means of execution, the cross, no way. This is not going to happen to you, Jesus. And then he went on to say, and not only that, you had a hard time hearing that, but let me tell you something else. You too must take up your cross. Deny yourself, take up your cross, and follow me. That was no easier for them to hear. So that is the last conversation. Then we have a few days span where nothing is recorded. And then we have, and then Jesus took three of his disciples and he went up on the mountain to pray. That's the next thing that happens, and we're going to see that this is related to the previous conversation. I never really connected the two, but they are definitely connected. So let's open there. We won't read it quite yet, but you can, maybe you're already there and I'm behind. But Matthew 17. So you have to remember just a few reminders here of how Jesus, how he was training them and teaching. He wasn't training and teaching them like people like to be taught. How do we like to be taught? Even in Eastern thinking, they would prefer to be taught like this. Let's show up at this location. You be the teacher. We'll be the students. We'll listen. We'll take notes. We'll learn and we'll gather all this knowledge and we'll feel better about it. But Jesus did not teach them like that. He taught them life on life. He forced them into hospitality, to open their hearts, their lives to one another and to him. And he taught them through experiences where they didn't have to study faith. They didn't just have to study about faith. They had to really apply faith. And when they didn't, they got immediate consequences of it. So this is how Jesus trained and taught them. And they saw this eternal truth, truth and grace. We come back to that, but I just want to give you an example of it. Real quick. This is truth, okay? We're all in the same boat. You have gone your own way apart from God. You've rebelled against God. The punishment for that is death. That means that you're going to be eternally separated from God. Is that a hard truth? That, my friend, is a hard truth. People don't like to hear that truth. People don't like to speak that truth. Jesus spoke the truth. But you see, he also spoke grace. He said, but I've taken your place. I've paid that price for you. You must put your faith in me. So truth, this perfect combination of truth and grace that Jesus was teaching them. So this, all these things are working together in what he's teaching them. Yet there are many barriers to coming to know God. And so he is going to make them face some of those barriers. And here's where we come in. We have to face those same barriers. Do you realize in every step towards God, there's a barrier? You know, I've watched many of you go down this path. No interest in God. No interest whatsoever. All of a sudden, you become a little interested in God. And you begin down this trail towards God. Now tell me, did you run into any barriers on that trail? There were many, weren't there? There were many. And then you come to this huge barrier. When you come face to face, you see, and what Jesus is saying is that he's telling them this all along. You're going to have to take up your cross. You see, many people will avoid the barriers. They'll skirt you around the barriers. But if you get skirted around the barriers, you never get to the truth. So Jesus starts off the very beginning. He's warning them there are barriers. And so they got the disciples. Remember this, they're in this training. They're in this equipping. They're in this preparing, being taught by Jesus. They get the miracles. They get to see miracles. Not pretend miracles like you see a lot of times today. They saw real, honest-to-goodness miracles. They saw the transfiguration, where they saw the godness come shining through of Jesus. They got to see that. We're going to read it in just a minute. They got the warmth of relationship with him, true friendship. They got to experience his authority. They got to experience the depth of teaching unheard of before. But they also get a truth that overloads them. And the truth that overloads them is the cross. It's the barrier they run into. To keep them, they're moving towards God. They're moving. You see, there's this truth that we all are separated from God until we cross that chasm when we become connected to Him. We know Him. So there are all these barriers to stop us from getting there. And so a lot of the way that Jesus explained this is the cross. There is the cross of salvation is the first big barrier that comes to. What is the cross of salvation? Well, when you turn to God, you have to acknowledge where you stand with Him, that you're apart from Him, that you deserve to die. You have to be identified with the cross, accept Jesus' substitutional death on the cross, and be reconciled to God. There's also the cross of sanctification. That is, how do you stop doing the things you used to do? It's by faith. The same way that you came to God. It's by faith. You, as Romans 6:11 tells us, you reckon it to be true that you're dead to sin and alive to Christ. So it's the cross of sanctification. And then there's the cross of connection. How do you come in contact with God? So tomorrow morning you get up, you get out your Bible, you start to read, and there's nothing. You just read. You just read the words. There is the cross of submitting your mind, your emotions, your will to Him if you would come in contact with, real contact with Him. There's also the cross of abiding, where we daily take up our cross. And we actually have fellowship with Him throughout the day, every day, where we walk in abiding fellowship with Him. They heard all of these things. They heard there has to be a core purpose change. You were on your own mission before. You were on your own mission. Maybe you still are on your own mission. And he told them, you basically, you have to leave your mission. That doesn't mean you quit your job and do this. But in your core purpose of doing things changes about everything. And you now are on his mission. And so these are the things that Jesus was teaching them. This Galatians 2:20, I've been crucified with Christ. I no longer live, but Christ lives in me. The life I live in the flesh, I live by faith in the Son of God who loved me and gave himself for me. So, all of these things leading up to, I believe, this transfiguration is right in this perfect place. So hopefully as we go through this, you'll be able to understand and see a little more deeply the meaning of it. So, they've just, you remember, Jesus' first 2 years, 2.5 years of ministry. He's all around. He's been to Jerusalem. He's made a couple trips to Jerusalem. He's around. He's in Galilee. All around the Sea of Galilee, that whole region. Now he's left Capernaum on the north shore of the Sea of Galilee. He's headed north. And that's where the Mount of Transfiguration is. When he leaves there, when they walk down from that mountain, they're going to come to Capernaum and then they're going to head south. They're going to Jerusalem. They're going to the cross. That's where he's headed when he leaves. So everything's going to be different after this. So let's look at this conversation he has with his disciples at the end of chapter 16. We'll start with verse 21 to 22. From that time, Jesus began to show his disciples that he must go to Jerusalem and suffer many things from the elders and chief priests and scribes and be killed, and on the third day be raised. And Peter took him aside and began to rebuke him, saying, far be it from you, Lord, this shall never happen to you. But he turned to Peter and said, get behind me, Satan, you are a hindrance to me. Remember, we talked about that. If you are not in line, if you're not following Christ, then you are a hindrance to him. For you are not setting your mind on the things of God, but the things of man. And then he came. That's a hurdle to get over. He came to a deeper hurdle for them. Then Jesus told his disciples, if anyone would come after me, he must deny himself, take up his cross, and follow me. For whoever would save his life will lose it. Whoever loses his life for my sake will find it. For what will it profit a man if he gains the whole world and forfeits his soul? Or what shall a man give in return for his soul? So, we looked at that on two levels. The first level is, am I going to just pursue my way the rest of my life? And then in the end, have nothing. In eternity, have nothing. Or, even as a believer, one that has come to God, am I just going to stay in the outer room and never really know God? Never really follow Him? Never die to self and really experience the joy of intimate fellowship with Him? So there's two levels of the cross there that we looked at last week. So let's look at... this is eight verses, a little bit long, so just follow through with me so we can get... Here's the thing about the transfiguration. It's history. It's a real, honest to goodness, I'll call it a story, but it's really, this happened exactly as it's written here. This really happened. We have so many witnesses to this. So it's not a theological teaching. So if we're reading in Romans, there's just theology, we may take this and break it down word for word. We're not going to approach this like this. Because this is a story, it's intact. And we're not going to tear it up. It's given this central message, and it's in this particular space at this particular time for a reason. So I want us to get the reason it's here, following what we just talked about, the cross. So let's get the essence of the story here. And after 6 days, Jesus took with him Peter, James, and John, his brother, and led them up a high mountain by themselves. Now we know from other places, from Luke, that he took them up to pray. That was the reason he was going up there. And he was transfigured before them, and his face shone like the sun, and his clothes became white as light. And behold, there appeared to them Moses and Elijah talking with him. And Peter said to Jesus, Lord, it is good that we are here. If you wish, I will make three tents here, one for you, one for Moses, and one for Elijah. He was still speaking when, behold, a bright cloud overshadowed them, and a voice from the cloud said, this is my beloved Son, with whom I am well pleased. Listen to him. When the disciples heard this, they fell on their faces and were terrified. But Jesus came and touched them, saying, rise and have no fear. And when they lifted up their eyes, they saw no one but Jesus only. And then they came down the mountain. They had some more discussion. So this, what's going on here? This is a foretaste of the future happening of the cross and the glory that will result from His voluntary humiliation and obedience unto death. Let's go to Philippians 2, 8 and 9. And being found in appearance as a man, just talking about Jesus, He humbled Himself and became obedient to death, even death on a cross. And then following the cross, what happened after the cross? Therefore God exalted Him to the highest place and gave Him the name that is above every name, that at the name of Jesus every knee should bow in heaven and on earth and under the earth, and every tongue confess that Jesus Christ is Lord, to the glory of God the Father. So, what happens after the cross is the joy, the glory. But if you're going to have the glory, if you're going to see Jesus, if you're going to contact with God for who He is, then first must come the cross. So I believe that this is situated here following this first revelation to His disciples that the cross is coming. It's coming to them and it's coming to Him. And then you have Jesus being seen in His glory. It's a foretaste of this future happening of the cross. It's also one of the many revelations of the deity of Christ. But we're not going to get into that particular aspect of it now. The transfiguration, I believe, was also for Jesus. It was in partly answer to His prayer. He's there on the mountain praying, and this prepares him for what He's about to endure. Because we know what Jesus is about to endure on the cross. Not just the physical pain and suffering, but He's going to be separated from the Father. He's going to be alone. He's going to bear our sin, and that sin will separate Him. This is preparing Him for difficult times, because He gets to see the joy beyond the cross. He gets to see the glory that's going to happen. And He meets there Moses and Elijah. These guys are here. There, Moses is representing the law. Elijah is representing the prophets. It's representing the Old Testament. That all these things are pointing to Jesus and to this moment, the later moment of Him being glorified. So there's no one here, no other human to share in His what's going on with Him. And so I believe He is, just like He was comforted in the garden, He is comforted. He sought out and He shared with these guys, but they did not understand. And He is comforted by the Father in this manner. But there's something deeper that is our main point this morning that I want us to get. In verse 5, it says, "My beloved Son, with whom I am well pleased, listen to Him, hear Him." You'll notice on the title of the message, there's an exclamation point there. Listen to Him, hear Him. In the ESV, that exclamation point is not there. In the NIV, it puts the exclamation point there. And I believe, within context there, I believe that that is correct. An exclamation point belongs there. That it's not just a, oh, listen to Him. It's a, I am pleased with where He's going. I'm pleased with where He's been. I am pleased with the direction and the path He is on. It's my plan. You didn't listen to Him the first time. Now listen to what He's saying. You didn't hear it. Listen to Him. Why? There's a voice out of heaven is telling them this. They did not hear. They had not been listening. He told them plainly, this is difficult stuff. This is difficult stuff, but you're not listening. I want you to get this. I want you to hear it. It's like, what are those words that are so difficult and hard to hear that they require a voice from heaven and this glorious sight that they see? You did not listen to the words. You did not receive the words. Now, listen to the words. Here's another chance. Listen to the words. What if someone refuses the cross? You see, they were refusing the cross. They were refusing the cross. You know, in the modern church, we talk about the cross, but we really don't talk much about deny yourself and follow Christ. Salvation is free, isn't it? We've advertised that fact, and it is. That is the truth. Salvation is free, and discipleship will cost you everything. That's true too. Salvation is free. We bring nothing to our salvation. Our work, nothing we bring to our salvation. We bring our sin. But when we follow Jesus, He wants us totally. we forsake all, deny ourselves, and follow Him. That is a barrier. But what if someone refuses the cross? In salvation, what if someone refuses the cross? I hope in your head you're giving me the right answer. If you refuse the cross, all hope is lost. The Bible is very, very, very clear about this. If you refuse the cross, no matter how good you try to be or want to be, all is lost. What would you trade for your soul? If you refuse the cross of sanctification, that's not a good thing either. You do not grow. You never experience intimacy with Him. So, are these words from heaven loaded with rebuke? I believe they are. They were an endorsement and a reminder of all the difficult things that Jesus said concerning His death and the necessity of all of His followers to take up their cross and follow Him. Jesus, the voice from heaven, God the Father, is saying, these things are completely true. They're in perfect alignment with Me, with My desires. Do not murmur about these things. Hear, listen, obey, respond. But Peter and the others were not ready just yet to hear and obey. They still were not ready. You see that in Peter's response. Let's build three shelters here. Do you see what Peter's trying to do here? He's trying to enjoy. He already refused the cross, remember? Oh, you can't go down that road, Jesus. And now he's saying, well, let's stay up here. Man, this is wonderful. Boy, we've seen this sight. We've seen a little glimpse of the glory of God. We've tasted of heaven here on the mountain. Let's just stay here. Let's don't go back down there with all those Pharisees and scribes and the scum of the earth. Let's stay here. This is awesome. He wanted the taste of heaven, but he didn't want the cross. He wanted to have the taste of heaven without the cross. And you do not get the taste of heaven without the cross. There is no aroma of heaven without the cross. There's no enjoying and staying in the presence of God in the holy place without the cross. You've got to come by the brazen altar. There's no abiding in His presence without the cross. Without the cross, all is lost. This was illustrated in the Old Testament for thousands of years. What do you do? You come in to the outer court. If you want to enter the holy place, you must come by the sacrifice. You must come by the sacrifice where the priest put his head on the head of the lamb and he said, this ought to be me. This ought to be me dying. And he would cut the throat of the lamb. He would throw the whole thing up there on the burnt offer, on the brazen altar. And then that representative, that dying to self, that acknowledging, and then they could go into the holy place. Listen to Him. It's not just meant for the three disciples that are there. It's meant for the rest of the disciples, and it's meant for us too. And, you know, I can almost hear somebody say, don't say that stuff. People will misunderstand. And they probably will. But there is no real power. There's no real home run hitting power without this most difficult truth. And there's no grace without this difficult truth. Do you sense the hope? There's hope in this. No matter who you are, there's hope in this. I really wish all of you would believe me. Really. I wish all of you would believe me. But you know, no matter what I say, no matter what we read, there's going to be a hardness, there's going to be a stubbornness of heart. There's going to be a refusal to yield yourself to God, to deny yourself and follow Him. There's going to be a hanging on to self. It's saying, the voice is to stop the furious pace and be satisfied. Stop the furious pace. Come to Me and be satisfied. To experientially know the difference between religion or just adding Jesus to your life or even getting up and reading and praying, to know the difference between that and I've been crucified with Christ and I will take up My cross and follow Jesus. Why do you want your own way so badly? Why do you need to have control Why do you think this pursuit of yours will satisfy? It will not satisfy in the end. And what would you trade for your soul anyway? Why are you stressed out? Why do you respond to people like that? On the inside, maybe not on the outside. There's an answer. There's an answer to these things. And it's at the cross. It's found at the cross. Let's go to John 12, 23. We've been here every week for the last 3 weeks. We've read this verse. So we're reading it again. 23 to 26. And if you read through the rest of this chapter, you'll see so many connections between first dying and then experiencing the glory of Christ. Then seeing the light. Then having intimate fellowship with Him. But first, coming to the cross. The hour has come for the Son of Man to be glorified. I tell you the truth. Unless a kernel of wheat falls to the ground and dies, it remains only a single seed. But if it dies, it produces many seeds. The man who loves his life will lose it, while the man who hates his life in this world will keep it for eternal life. Whoever serves me must follow me, and where I am, my servant must also be. My Father will honor the one who serves me. And then 2 Corinthians 3:15. Just a few books over, Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, Acts, Romans, 1 Corinthians, 2 Corinthians. Even to this day, when Moses is read, a veil covers their hearts. But when anyone turns to the Lord, the veil is taken away. Now the Lord is the Spirit, and where the Spirit of the Lord is, there is freedom. And we, who with unveiled faces all reflect the Lord's glory, are being transformed into His likeness with ever-increasing glory, which comes from the Lord, who is the Spirit. This transfiguration that we've just read about is a glimpse behind the veil of Jesus' body. The cross must come first for Jesus to have full glorification and be the light of men. You can read on here about the... You do not get the light, you do not get the glory of God, and you do not get that most holy place of that connection with God until there's this dying to self, until there's coming by way of the cross. And if you remember our example last week, and I think we're going to sing that song today, is that right, Carlton? That of the tabernacle, how... There's all this action. There's stuff going on. There's good stuff in the outer courts. But what's the point of the whole thing? The point of the whole thing is connection to God. So we can be in church and we can follow rules and we can say, get up and read our Bible. But until this is our point. Until you are really forsaking all, you're dying to self, connecting to God, experiencing Him, you're not really changing. You're not really knowing Him, and you're not really growing. This is where we must go, into the holy place. And I'd like to read you an explanation of all that. Hopefully this will tie all this together. It's from the book, The Pursuit of God, by A.W. Tozier. And this is a little bit of a long section. You know, I don't usually like to read this much, but I'm forced to. I believe this explains what we've been talking about so well. So don't let your eyes glaze over and focus. So I think this will bring together the veil being removed and coming in contact with God. You guys remember what the veil is, right? There's so much analogy here in Scripture. The veil was that thick curtain. It separated, in the tabernacle, it separated the holy place from the most holy place, from the very presence, the Shekinah glory of God. That separated people from being in real contact with God. Now, through the death of Christ, we have access to this most holy place. So that's what's behind this. So with the veil removed by the rending of Jesus' flesh, with nothing on God's side to prevent us from entering, why do we tarry without? Why do we consent to abide all our days just outside the Holy of Holies and never enter at all to look upon God? We hear the bridegroom say, "Let me see thy countenance. Let me hear thy voice. For sweet is thy voice, and thy countenance is comely." We sense that the call is for us, but still we fail to draw near, and the years pass, and we grow old and tired in the outer courts of the tabernacle. What hinders us? The answer usually given simply that we are cold, but that will not explain all of the facts. There is something more serious than coldness of heart, something that may be back of that coldness and be the cause of its existence. What is it? What but the presence of a veil in our hearts? A veil not taken away as the first veil was, but which remains there, still shutting out the light and hiding the face of God from us. It is the veil of our fleshly fallen nature living on, unjudged within us, uncrucified, unrepudiated. It is the close woven veil of the self-life, which we have never truly acknowledged, and of which we have been secretly ashamed, and which for these reasons we have never brought to the judgment of the cross. It is too mysterious, this opaque veil. It is not too mysterious, this opaque veil, nor is it hard to identify. We have but to look into our own hearts, and we shall see it there, sewn and patched and repaired it may be, but there nevertheless, an enemy to our lives, an effective block of our spiritual progress. Have you stopped growing? Is there an effectual block to your spiritual progress? This veil is not a beautiful thing, and it is not a thing about which we commonly care to talk. But I am addressing the thirsting souls who are determined to follow God, and I know they will not turn back because the way leads temporarily through the blackened hills. The urge of God within them will assure their continuing pursuit. They will face the facts, however unpleasant, and endure the cross for the joy set before them. So I am bold to name the threads out of which this inner veil is woven. It is woven of the fine threads of the self-life, the hyphenated sins of the human spirit. They are not something we do. They are something we are. And therein lies both their subtlety and their power. To be specific, the self sins are self-righteousness, self-pity, self-confidence, self-sufficiency, self-admiration, self-love, and a host of others like them. They dwell too deep within us and are too much of a part of our natures to come to our attention until the light of God is focused on them. The grosser, more obvious manifestations of these sins, egotism, exhibitionism, self-promotion, are strangely tolerated in Christian leaders, even in circles of impeccable orthodoxy. They are so much in evidence as actually for many people they become identified with the gospel. I trust it is not a cynical observation to say that they appear these days to be a prerequisite for popularity in some sections of the church visible. Promoting self under the guise of promoting Christ is currently so common as to excite little notice. I'll stop there. You know, honestly, I know I had not much new to say today. You know, we've been on this subject the last 2 weeks. And if you believe that God leads us, if you believe that He cares about each local body, if He cares about this body, if He cares about you individually, if you believe that, then you can believe that God is guiding us. These things we do not take lightly. We don't just plan a service just to plan it. But we're, for all of our ability, for all of our, of where we believe that we are led by God and where we are and what we're studying. He has us here for a reason. He has us, Terry, here for a reason. So, I'm not going to ask you to do anything overt. I'm just going to ask you to do something between you and God. That you take these things to God. There's things that need to be dealt with. You know, when you refuse to go over a barrier because of the cost, that's probably a cross thing. It's probably you're refusing to deny self. You're refusing to surrender and follow Him. And you're refusing the joy that lies on the other side. The glory and the connectedness to God. So, I am encouraging you. We are encouraging you to... Well, there's not a lot of new teaching here today. But I'm encouraging you to... You go to God. Examine your heart. See what needs to happen next. Is there something cross-like that needs to be dealt with by the cross? Some of these sins that we mentioned here today, not things that you do necessarily, but things that we are. So, I would just encourage you to, this week, even today, to turn to God, and as we sing this last song, each of us, just examine your heart before God. Turn to Him. There's only glory and light and joy on the other side of the cross.